It's the Roundtable on WAMC, Wednesday by my calculation, coming up on 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff here, and it's the panel. Oh, what a panel we have today. Rosemary Armeo strolls in just in the nick of time, as always.
That's called being on time.
Perfect. No, I said in the nick of time, right?
Yes.
Let's not start at odds here. What are you holding there?
I'm not quite sure. It looks like a skull that says, protect the First Amendment, resist Trump.
Oh, you know what? Polly Law was here for the copyright forum, and I think I saw Polly. She probably made that.
I want that. Maybe I could ask.
Well, we'll look the other way. I mean, there are cameras here.
But, steal? Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah. Steal this whatever. Also, Teresa Bourgeois is here. Hi, Teresa.
Hello, hello.
A birthday, a shout out today.
Yeah, I want to give a little shout out. It would be Senator Ted Kennedy's 85th birthday today, and I had the privilege to work with him and his, think about today what he said at the 1980 convention in his concession speech. He said, for all those who cares have been our own, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die. And I think that's still relevant today.
So happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Senator Kennedy.
And also with us today is WAMC's Alan Shartok. How's the old gammy leg doing today?
Not too good.
I shout out of your own.
When you wake up in the morning, it's always worse, apparently.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get, and they want you to put weight on it. So you do that, but at your own risk. And anyway, why complain? There's no good reason to, because nobody will care.
As you know, I'm not a doctor, but I would say that it was ill-advised to be walking around on your Aircast without any crutches or anything yesterday.
Holy moly.
Yeah, did you see him?
No, mm-hmm. That's just a bad idea, Alan.
Oh.
Yeah. Are you on the meds today, sir?
Well, I'm taking the ibuprofen. That's all.
Oh, okay. So nothing good.
And I think that's the right thing to do. Don't you?
No.
Yes.
Rosemary. Okay, we have a split decision here.
That's what pain pills are for. He's got legitimate pain. He's not turning into an addict. He's not doing it for fun.
You're right. You're right.
No. Yeah, I don't like that stuff.
Okay.
But there are those people who do, and then they should take it. Everybody, each to their own.
Okay. Well, just hang in there, and you know we're pulling for you. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. If you want to send Alan some best wishes, we would love to hear from you, or even if you want to send him ill wishes. The Homeland Security Department
awful.
The Homeland Security Department greatly expanding the number of people living in the U.S. illegally who are considered a deportation priority. The new guidelines under President Trump call for the deportation of any individuals in the country illegally if they are convicted, charged, or suspected of a crime, which could include traffic infractions, says the AP. Department memos released yesterday eliminate guidelines under the Obama administration that focused enforcement on immigrants in the U.S. illegally who have convicted of serious crimes or are a threat to national security. The Obama administration also focused its enforcement resources on people who had just crossed the border. The new guidelines also called to send some immigrants caught crossing the Mexican border illegally back to Mexico, regardless of where they are from. Mexicans are fearing deportee and refugee camps could be popping up along the northern border as these rules roll out. Who wants first today? Hearing
well,
no one.
Alan, we'll move. No, I was waiting for Alan.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's very nice of you. But here's what I'm thinking. As I said in my morning commentary, it's occurring to me that there will be those people who are so sympathetic to the people who have been living among us for maybe 20 years, who've been the infrastructure of our towns and our villages, pardon me, who we have come to love.
Somebody got a lozenge
from this. What do we learn from this? Never eat the breakfast your wife or your wonderful wife puts in front of you while you're going on it.
How can you? Okay, you're already in trouble. Just continue.
Right,
sorry,
right,
Roselle,
right.
And sorry, everyone.
Well, that's why I said wonderful one.
Ah.
So there you are, and now with a glass of water. Okay, so what I'm going to say is a lot of people will be putting some of these people in their homes. A lot of people will be taking care of them as this thing gets worse, because apparently it's going to get a lot worse. We're talking about lots of agents, ICE agents, who will be out looking for people. and then grabbing them, and then you won't see them again after 20 years. So, as a result of that, it's going to take a lot of courage on a lot of people's parts. I'm reminded, of course, of all the people who hid Jews, the righteous Gentiles, during the Holocaust years. I do think it's going to come to that. I think a lot of people are going to have to now decide, is this so terrible and is this so harmful to these folks that we have to do it at great danger to themselves, by the way, because, you know, they could be arrested for that, too. There you go. That's the only thing I'm thinking right now.
Teresa.
I see it as a political solution in search of a policy problem. And it's a very high cost to the U.S., both financial cost and in the cost of our basic democracy and the sort of the core soul of what we are. But whether you agree or disagree with it on a philosophical, you know, basis, it just as a practical matter, it's a pretty challenging thing to do. I was thinking about what's the analogy, and it's as if on the New York State Thruway or any highway, you declared that every state police officer needed to stop and you know, give a ticket to everyone who was speeding.
Making your numbers.
Yeah, it just everybody who is speeding, you stop and give them a ticket. And so in doing so, think about the whole process all along the line. First of all, that means that's what the state police officers focuses on. And then those
you
tickets
overlook
have to,
more serious things.
You overlook more serious things. The tickets have to be processed. It clogs up that system. And it's not unlike what's going to happen with this system. And the problem is that fighting terrorism in this country is a serious problem and a serious challenge, and in so many ways it's a needle in a haystack problem. And so what they've done is just made the haystack a lot bigger and really tax the resources and the time and attention of people who are trying to do it. And so, you know, separate from the humane issue, just as a practical matter, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
I resist this on so many measures. It's hard to know where to begin. I want to talk about my Bosnian friends who in the early 1990s watched their country, which was progressive and a leader in the world. It had been the host of the 1984 Winter Olympics. It was a star nation, and they watched it devolve into ethnic violence and terror, and it began just this way. They keep reminding me, you think it can't happen here because good people don't think this way, but we are now going after every immigrant who's committed a small crime like a traffic violation. Who among our listeners has not done that? Would you be subject to deportation for that? Or worse, the crime is getting into the country by trying to bypass our archaic, chaotic, ridiculous immigration laws that we're the ones who can't get our act together to fix. And I think of the ICE agents who are going around ripping people apart, ripping families apart, with this smug attitude that, well, they broke the law and we're a country of laws, like a righteous attitude while doing the wrong thing. That's just too horrible for me to contemplate. And then there's the whole short-sightedness of an anti-immigration policy in the first place. This country doesn't have a birth rate to support a workforce without immigrants, and we are losing the advantage that America always had as a beacon. Go to America, you can do your best here. That's not true anymore. And so the great minds of the world who have to leave their own countries are going to go to Europe or to Australia or Canada or any place else rather than the United States, where they're hunted down and treated like lesser citizens. It's appalling for us and for them.
And I wonder, and Alan, you may have some thoughts about this, how long what's the business community going to say about this? Because the fact is that our economy depends on a lot of these folks. And I understand that, you know, we have to step back and say Donald Trump during the campaign said he was going to do this. And so he did get elected, and he did get elected doing this, saying he was going to do this. So it's not a surprise, but he did not have a mandate. And I just really do wonder what the business community over time is going to say about this, because they rely on these folks.
Well, Time Magazine just did a big piece talking to CEOs about how they feel after the first month of Trump, and they love it. There's no issue about this at all.
Our email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. It is the Roundtable Panel. Teresa Bourgeois, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff in for Joe. We'll be back. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:23 on your Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's our Roundtable panel, and we have Teresa Bourgeois with us, and also Rosemary Armeo and Alan Shartok. And the email address, once again, is panel at WAMC.org. Bob from Grafton writes, his grandfather was an immigrant. His wife was an immigrant. What am I missing? Oh, yeah, they're white. So is Putin. That's from Bob. This is from Chris. Obama Later. Deported more than 2 million immigrants, more deportations than any president in U.S. history. Trump has his work cut out for him to surpass Obama. Anybody?
Don't think he'll have a problem.
Well, but that's right. I mean, that's why I say that this is a political solution in search of a policy problem, because, in fact, the notion that the Obama administration was not going after criminals is just incorrect. It's factually incorrect. It was his directive to do that. And they did increase border controls and increase deportation. In fact, one of the things that I was reading and hearing last night and today is about what a difficult time they had hiring the Border Patrol people that they wanted under the program that they were running, and they were not successful in doing that. So the question is, as a practical matter, will the Trump administration even be able to hire the 15,000 additional Border Patrol people that they said?
I'm sure he'll be able to make a hire. 15,000? I think they'll be able to get that done. Yeah?
Well, I'm not an expert in this. I only know what I've read in the last 24 hours, and it's that they had a tough time, the Border Patrol, in hiring the people because of the nature of the work, because where you have to live, where it's located, where these jobs are located, that attracting talent, you know, the right talent with the right skills to those areas, they've had a difficult time doing that.
Talent? They don't care about that. Look at TSA. Why don't you just transfer some of those security people?
No, it's
So begins the TSA rant for today. Yeah. Let the record show, it's 9:25.
But the other thing to look at here, too, is in terms of the money behind this, is that private prisons, you know, what are they going to do with all these folks? And there's
right.
a whole private industry, prison industry complex that will benefit from this. And I don't know the facts here, but I'd be curious to look at donations and see. But that's a whole other situation, is how what happens to these folks once they're detained? What are their rights?
Bob's letter about the record. Go ahead, Alan.
I just wanted to say one thing, and that is this notion of criminality that Rosemary was just talking about. The fact of the matter is, this is all a matter of definition. Because I've been talking with some of the Trumpistas who have been saying, wait a second now, anybody who crosses into this country illegally with no documents is a criminal, right, and therefore are subjected to this also. That's right. Terrifying.
Right. And we've already seen a case of fraud, of blaming crime on immigrants who did nothing. We had two New Mexico men who claimed that while camping, Mexicans snuck over the border and shot them up. And then it turns out they were drunk and shot at each other. Immigrants are easy targets in an atmosphere that Trump has set up.
But there are a group of people who believe that these, and I think this is, Alan, what you're talking about, to believe that these the folks yep. should not be here because they have committed a crime by coming across the border. And
well, strictly speaking, true.
It's true.
The letter we had from Chris mentioned Obama deporting a record number of people, and I just wondered, maybe it happened, but was there a similar hue and cry when President Obama over 8 years was deporting a record number?
A similar hue and cry?
Well,
no,
I certainly remember.
Here's
I certainly
why.
Remember Rosemary. Yeah, right. Go ahead. I certainly remember Rosemary talking about it, and I know that we have talked about it on the roundtable. He did not get a pass on that.
Yeah, he did not. If there's any difference, it's because he specifically targeted the bad hombres, to use our current president's terminology. He went after drug dealers. He went after people who had committed violent crimes. There's no disagreement that we don't want violent criminals in this country. So he had less of a hue and cry than you're hearing for Trump, who's the first publicized deportations were of a mother and of a young man who had a promising future here and had lived most of his whole life in the United States. Those are not the kind of immigrants I intend to target. I don't want that.
And this reinforces the notion that Trump, you know, just because he says something over and over doesn't make it true,
correct.
Which he repeated over and over again, that the
crime.
Obama administration was looking the other way at the immigrants who are committing crimes. And in fact, that's not the case. And in fact, some people thought the Obama administration went too far. Mm-hmm. But clearly, the Obama administration had a very hard, you know, significant crackdown on immigrants in this country who committed crimes, deporting them.
I think your point about the troopers on the highway stopping everybody for speeding is a really good one, Teresa, because mm-hmm. as a practical matter, they will have to prioritize. You can't do everybody.
But this order. Now, I have not read the order last night. I did read reporting about it, so I haven't read it word for word. But by all accounts, what the order says is everybody. It says everybody's speeding down the highway, figuratively. You arrest everybody. And that does not make us more safe. It's not who we are as a country, but it will in the long run not make us more safe, because it makes it more complicated to focus on the real threat that there is in this country.
We have about 45 seconds before the BBC break.
Well, let me just say, if I can, thank you to all those lovely people who are wishing me not so well. I really appreciate listening to Alan, because it lets me know what it will be like when I have a stroke. Nice.
Really? Somebody
then,
wrote that?
Oh,
that's not nice at all.
Yeah,
that's not even funny.
Yeah. No. And then, no, it's not. And then we heard from Jan, who said, if you, parenthesis, can shut your mouth and take 5 deep breaths through your nose, you will clear your windpipe almost instantly.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you what.
Taking that as almost, go.
Well, I'll give you a couple of minutes here, because we will take a break for BBC News, take a drink of water, and we'll come back. Oh, hello again. It's the Roundtable Panel. It's Wednesday morning, 9:34. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today, and it's the panel par excellence. Teresa Bourgeois here, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. And this email at panel@wamc.org came in specifically for Teresa. This is from Janet in Ulster Park, who says, can our wonderful wonk, Teresa, speak to the writ of mandamus, which has been filed with the Supreme Court, calling for a revote back to the primaries due to Russian interference in our November 2016 election. Well, wonky, what do you think?
I can't speak to the the details of that, because I don't know if it's going to actually happen. But Donald Trump's our president, and he's going to remain our president. And I think what we need to do is stay focused on not so much on the substance of his tweets, but the substance of the policy changes that he's making, and that's where our energy should go.
Alan, what do we say to that?
Well, the only thing I can say is I've been teaching Marbury versus Madison for a billion years, and everybody should go read the case again, which involves a writ of mandamus. At least that's the way I've always pronounced it. You may be right.
I don't know.
You know,
I thought it was a character in The Hobbit. I don't know.
Well, you know, I agree with exactly what I just heard. The only from Teresa, the only thing difference I have with her is he will remain for the next 4 years. You could probably figure that out. But I do think that there are some things that he's been doing that really do lead to investigation, including his relationship with the Russians. And if it turns out, and I think it may, that there was all kinds of illegal stuff going on with the Russians, with the Russian agents in the United States, in Russia, instructed by Trump. If that is true, if that happens, turns out to be true, it may be less than 4 years.
Okay.
That's possible. And I do think that New York Times and others are doing some amazing reporting on these Russian ties. And
right.
At some point, a majority of the Republicans are going to need to put country before party and look at this, because as some of the Republican senators have said, that this time it was the Democrats, but next time it could be the Republicans, and we're all Americans, and we need to be very concerned about Russian interference in our elections, and it might be in our elections and beyond.
I think the Republicans do think that they are putting country above party. They don't like Donald Trump. They don't like his leadership, but they believe that they're pushing through a program that they consider important. Eliminating debt, getting entitlement programs under control, getting rid of regulations. Of course, I hate every one of those, but in a Republican mind, that's important for America. They see themselves as doing their patriotic duty. We humans have a great capacity to see horrible things we do in a good light. I think that's what's going on.
This came in from Mike to panel at WAMC.org. Good morning, panel. I have a disabled sister that was robbed of her life savings by an illegal immigrant. I have a former college roommate whose first cousin was murdered by an illegal immigrant. I agree that the hype Trump has placed on a wall is pure populism, but one must examine why we have immigration laws. They do serve a purpose. Is an extreme limit the abolishment of ICE? I don't think so. And that's from Mike. Anybody want to weigh in?
Well, I want to and just say I'm glad he wrote. Right. It is a position, and it is a legitimate position that some people can take. I don't happen to like it. I happen to think that we got ourselves into this situation, and really the Obama way out was the correct way, trying to correct the way that give people a chance to remain in this country. But it's a position.
And I think, you know, again, President Obama's administration went after violent criminals, immigrants, right. and absolutely, I agree with that due process and such, but absolutely, that was the right thing to do. And just because Donald Trump said over and over again that that wasn't happening, it was happening.
I regret what happened to him. It sounds like some terrible luck that there are two incidences, but the fact that you know who committed both of these crimes indicates that there was adjudication. We have a court system to set up to deal with crime and to punish it, and I'm not sure that we need to disrupt the entire immigration system. I would like Republicans and Democrats, if we're going to spew idealism, to sit down and figure out a system that's fair and workable, and then stop people who are coming in illegally.
And you want the focus to be on just those kinds of heinous, violent crimes.
Correct.
And that's my concern about this blanket focus, is that it takes the focus off of just those kinds of serious crimes. That's where the focus should be, and I'm sorry for the loss that you suffered.
This one,
you know,
came.
There's one other thing about this business of the state police stopping everybody. We already had one letter saying, "Yeah, the state police do stop everyone. They don't stop everyone." No. Number one, but number two, there are instructions in Teresa. You said you hadn't read the order, but there are instructions that state police and others should stop and arrest everyone. Now, what if the governors, and I think it's quite clear that some governors will, say, no, not on my watch. That's not going to happen here. Very important to watch the people who are running the state governments and see what they have to say about this.
Right. I mean, that's a very interesting component of this, the so-called 287G program that has been rather, I don't want to say controversial, but it's met with mixed concern. And what will the role of the local law enforcement be if they have in fact been deputized to do this? Do they have the training, understanding, skill? And again, does that then distract them from what is their mandate? And that is to, as Alan says, to involve the local law enforcement in this effort.
This one came in from John, whose subject heading was Creating Terrorists. Good morning. Great policy for implementing a vicious cycle of insult, outrage, and violence, the very fundamentals of creating terrorists. And that's John. And our email address is panel@wamc.org. It is the roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Shartok. Ray in for Joe today. I don't know if you saw this one out of Reuters. Canada will continue to accept asylum seekers crossing illegally from the United States, but will ensure security measures are taken to keep Canadians safe. That's according to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He said that yesterday. The number of would-be refugees crossing into Canada at isolated and unguarded border crossings has increased in recent weeks amid fears that President Donald Trump will crack down on illegal immigrants, and photos of smiling Canadian police greeting the migrants have gone viral.
Yay, Canada.
Well, you know, this is interesting because we do know, and I've been saying this for a while, that this anti-immigrant thing is not limited to the United States. The Canadian poll, very frightening this morning. Here's Trudeau doing what I think is the right thing. And he's going from the 50s approval rating to the 40s. We saw it in Brexit. We have seen it. We see it now with Madame Le Pen actually leading in some polls, I believe, in France. And that is what we're seeing here is a almost universal pull up the gangplank way of doing politics on the part of the ultra-right in these countries.
So you're referring to a piece that came out in The Current, not the current public radio, but this is...
No. Well, who would read that?
This is something else. Majority of Canadians distrust government, Paul suggests, and this came out on the 16th. In a recent Edelman poll, only 43% of Canadians say they trust their government, down from 53% a year earlier, and 80% of Canadians feel the country's elites are out of touch.
Sounds like a new America brewing. We're talking about two different things, approval ratings and real leadership. And Angela Merkel and Justin Trudeau are true leaders. They're doing what's best for the country, what they think is really right, what's based on principles that their countries have lived on for years. And they're unpopular for it, and they're doing it anyway. Would that we had a leader like that.
But can you go too far? In other words, there are all kinds of troubles in Germany, and some say Angela Merkel was too open to bringing too many people, and it strained resources and strained social norms.
I think the problem is that because of the tone that, let's call it tone, that Donald Trump has set globally, because of the words he uses, because of his actions, it set a tone globally that rather than the world's leaders coming together and figuring out how to address this problem. They are, you know, shutting your borders and not assisting your friends is not helpful. And I think that he's created, you know, his venom is spreading. He's created a toxic atmosphere that makes it more difficult for leaders around the world, particularly our friends, to do the right thing.
Correct.
And in doing so, he is helping those who would destabilize our allies, and particularly I'm worried about Germany and Angela Merkel, because
you should be.
We really need her where she is, and
the Russians have targeted her too.
And
Trump continues to be an agent for Putin's plan to disrupt the West.
Has Breitbart, with Bannon sitting in the White House and Breitbart parking themselves in Germany to try to disrupt what's going on there.
But Alan, getting to Teresa's point, is in fact, which came first, the chicken or the egg, Trump or the rise of populism, which seems to have organically arisen around the world at approximately the same time, viz. Brexit and elsewhere?
I was going to mention Brexit because I think Brexit is really was out front in this. Of course, I agree with Rosemary, because what I'm seeing here is the idea that these guys are out front and encouraging the other guys, the other people around the country, to do the same thing. So Brexit did come first. On the other hand, Trump isn't doing any good in terms of moderating this populism, or if that's almost a nice word, populism, racism,
nationalism,
whatever, xenophobia that goes on in nationalism. Yeah.
I don't think this is something like populism just suddenly arose. I think this has been years in the making and part of a cycle where you have nationalism, and then it's beaten down by progressives, and then it rises again. So I do think that we liberals have to take some fault for what's happened. We have not educated people well about what was really happening. We did not pay attention to the costs of globalization, and that means both experts and liberals did not pay enough attention to people hurt by globalization, and this is our punishment.
But is the influx, say, of refugees and immigrants in, say, Germany, was it too much too fast? In other words, those citizens of that country expect a certain level of what was. And to change that quickly, you can automatically assume that populism will rise.
you have Syria imploding.
Yeah.
And there is no way that Germany alone or that the UN, all the countries in the world, did not fail. They failed to stop what was happening in Syria, to keep areas in the country safe or to stop the war, which would have kept the refugees there. So too much, too fast. What do you do when you have millions of people, more than at any other time in history, including World War II, exploding out of a country?
Alan.
Well, you know, Rosemary, that's what you're right, of course. Nevertheless, Angela Merkel took, a million refugees. That's incredible when you compare that to what we took here in the United States with the same rationale for protecting people, our people, their people, for giving people a way out of terror. And it is not good. But you got to hand it to her. One thing I would mention is that Merkel heads a country which had, and she's made reference to it, disastrous, Holocaust policies during those times. And Germany, I think she saw as this was a time to make up in public opinion for some of that.
Atonement. She sees it as atonement. And her actions at first were herald. She was almost Time Woman of the Year. She was Time Woman of the Year. She was a heroine. And then problems arose. The fact of the matter is the United States could easily absorb that amount of people. We're the ones who are in the wrong, not Angela Merkel, who took as many as she could.
And the U.S. could have taken some pressure off of Germany.
Absolutely.
By absorbing some of those people and helping with that situation, which is not of her making. But she stepped
and you think
up and
United
led.
States. Yeah,
I think the United States was not a good ally.
Hindsight being 2020, when the red line was crossed in Syria, would things have been better for refugees and the Syrian populace had we done something?
Impossible to say. I actually think that it might be the same. That would have been full-out war. At the time, I said on this show that I thought Obama, he shouldn't have drawn the red line because that like opened him up to critics saying, you're namby-pamby. But to pull back from it, that was not a bad decision. That place is a mess.
Hang on, folks. We need to take a quick break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We're just getting started here. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Cindy McMahon, Associate Broker at Hunt Real Estate ERA, Senior Real Estate Specialist, offering resources to help guide clients over 50 with their real estate needs. GetCindySold.com. Preservation League of New York State, offering EPIP, a revolving loan program to acquire, stabilize, and restore historic buildings in New York so our past has a future. Sunwood Builders Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-Builders.com. Adams Farragher Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries. AdamsFarms.com. And Public Market at 8 Main Street, West Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Serving lunch specials, sandwiches, salads, beer, and wine. Public Market on Facebook.
Our engineer, Rob Chacon, picks the best bumper music, and I'm loving that. It's Joe Newman, right? Rob? Oh, yeah. That's lovely. It's 9:50 on a Wednesday morning. The roundtable panel, Ray Graff in for Joe today. On our panel is Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. Teresa Bourgeois often saves some really choice nuggets for when we're in break.
She does. The breaks are great when she's here.
So go. You take it.
Well, what I was saying is that the refugees and immigrant issue is certainly creating angst all around the world. And so a leader has two choices. They either can tap into that angst and foment it, or they can acknowledge that angst and try to dissipate it. And I think the problem is, at the same time, you have the Canadian Prime Minister, you have Australian leaders, you have German leaders and others, even in Turkey, who are trying to acknowledge and dissipate that angst to deal with it. In the U.S., you have President Trump, who during the campaign and now as president, who has been tapping into and fomenting that angst and using it as a political tool. And so that has hurt us in this country in dealing with this issue, and that has hurt our allies' ability to deal with it around the world. And that's the problem, how he's using his power and his leadership, how he chooses his words and what he chooses to do with that angst that's there. It's not that it's not a problem. It's how he's addressing it that has caused problem for our allies all around the world.
Our email is panel at WAMC.org. Tom writes, immigration, what do you believe in? What do you stand for? The left's open border policies will destroy this country, bringing in large numbers of immigrants that are uneducated from very poor countries. It's funny that the left says Trump supporters are uneducated whites, but they love the uneducated folks from other groups. The left divides us.
And that's phooey, phooey. No one's in favor of open borders. No one. And the immigrants from Syria are doctors and lawyers, and most of them, 60%, are children. So it's just a bogus letter.
I do think people do have that.
But we love your letters.
We love your letter.
You know, go ahead, Carissa.
One of the things that this is doing is forcing people to really begin to understand what the role of immigrants and refugees are in the United States. And one of those areas where there's been more and more attention, because it's a looming problem, is in our hospitals. And our veterans hospitals, our rural hospitals, our urban hospitals, 25% or more of those doctors are immigrants or refugees, you know, people coming in. And in fact,
legally.
And in fact, many of them from the seven countries, and now we're switching from immigration to refugees issues, but there's going to be a new order coming up in the next few days, if not today. But this issue of the role of refugees and immigrants in our country, not only picking our fruit and, you know, our vegetables, but also sustaining our hospitals, is a very serious issue.
I guess I don't think we're ever going to get it right. I mean, Andrew Jackson, whose portrait is now hanging in the Oval Office again, excluded Catholics. He didn't want Catholics coming into the country because they were dangerous and the Pope was going to rule over us. Pope being a more sinister figure, apparently, than the president of Russia.
Well, we are very dangerous.
And so we've never had it right. And the Chinese is what started it. We didn't really have immigration rules for the first 150 years. That was true open borders. And it's what made America great. And then we decided we didn't like Chinese people. We have a terrible history on immigration.
This one is from Chris, who says, I think securing our borders and insisting on legal immigration is the best way to go. Is there another country in the world that has 12 million illegal immigrants?
Well, there will be after this new policy.
But the fact is that there's been an effort for years to try to get an immigration policy passed in this country, and they haven't been able to reach consensus. And that's part of the underlying issue here, is that there hasn't been a policy change in a long time. I know there was a major immigration reform in 1965, and I don't think we've had an overhaul successful. Well, I know there have been several successful attempts.
Reagan did something. The Reagan administration.
But a comprehensive policy.
Right.
But I know in 2006 they came close. I know Senator Kennedy and Senator McCain and others tried, and there have been subsequent efforts. But part of the reason at the front lines you have this lack of clarity is because on a policy level they haven't been able to clarify our outdated immigration rules.
Luke writes, Germany has an outstanding recent history of assimilating people with very different ideas, most notably all of the East Germans. They got this. That's very clever. This one is from Phil. I wonder if the administration's plans to expand deportations will include the undocumented workers hired by Trump when he was living, when he was in the construction business in New York City. Furthermore, his wife initially came over on a B-1, B-2 tourist visa in 1996 and worked for several months as a model in violation of that visa. That's Phil.
Yet to have that press conference they said they would have about her. But the other thing is that he continues. I mean, I think their wine, the Trump winery, is asked for to allow in immigrants to work. I'm not immigrants. And same as the Trump hotels down in Florida.
John writes, the immigrants are immigrants are the source of our problems is a false but convenient narrative. Fear of the other is the fuel of demagogues and of false final solutions. We must, of course, continue to resist, but along with this, we must offer compelling alternative narratives and solutions. That's from John.
Great letter, John.
Very great. I worry, and maybe this sounds harsh, but I keep thinking that these immigrants and refugees are essentially human shields to distract attention from other policy issues that the Trump administration is trying to push through. And that so you foment this outrage around the country and create the focus on those while without as much attention, you're changing Dodd-Frank, you're changing the fiduciary rule, you're changing buying yourself some time to change the healthcare policy. And it's I think that's tragic. It's not what we are as a country.
Alan, you want to comment on that?
No, I mean, I do think that those people who are writing to us, reminding us that every country has to have, you know, immigration rules, you know, are justified in their thinking. And as Teresa just, as always, brilliantly points out, there have been attempts to do that. But then you get these intervening variables like the Republicans saying, not one Obama, you know, program is going to pass on our watch. And so politics takes over where rationality and bipartisanship ought to exist.
Exactly right, Alan. Exactly right.
He likes hearing that. Say it again.
You're right.
I do.
No,
I do, especially with some of these letters that say, you know, please choke.
All right. Well, I apologize for jokingly say write an ill will letter. Don't do that. I was only kidding around. And Alan, it's on me. I apologize.
But Alan, I actually am enjoying it.
So, Alan, I think your issue of bipartisanship is so critical. In fact, I'll go back to Senator Kennedy and the time that I worked with him. It was a time where the Republicans had taken over. But they were able to reach some compromise. And there was a lot of focus around the country on, you know, what the change in policies might be. And there's a book that's been written about this, The Lion of the Senate. But they did find compromise with the Republicans. An enormous amount of legislation moved through, but only because the Republicans and the Democrats came together and compromised.
Teresa Bourgeois is on the panel, and Rosemary Armeo and Alan Chartok. And you want to join in? Well, that's fine. But to wish Alan something good happens to him. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll break for news and be back. It's the roundtable on WAMC. 10:05 is the time on a Wednesday. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the roundtable panel. We're down a third on the panel now. We still have Teresa Bourgeois, who's here, and Alan Chartok. Rosemary Armeo left. She has some important business to do.
And I came armed with plenty of quotes from presidents, so if we need to...
Oh, lay one on me. Go ahead.
Because in honor of President's Week, here is one, quote, if tyranny and oppression come to this land, it will be in the guise of fighting a foreign enemy.
Ah, yes. And Alan, do you know who said that?
Yes, of course. It was Abraham Lincoln.
Close enough. Madison. Right?
James Madison.
Yeah.
James Madison. Cool.
Yeah.
Madison was great. Do we want to know the best thing that Madison ever did? Does anybody know?
I have no idea.
He made the Twinkies. Well, it was Dolly.
Madison took illicit notes of the Constitutional Convention. And it was the only way we know what went on at the convention, because nobody was supposed to do that. They were afraid they'd hang him if they caught him. So that's what we owe Madison. At least I think it was Madison.
You are so smart. I forgot about that, Alan. You want one more quote?
Sure.
As long as there is unreasoning bigotry instead of understanding and tolerance, our nation will fall short of its full power and greatness.
All right, and that was...
As long as there's unreasoning bigotry instead of understanding and tolerance, our nation will fall short of its full power.
I'm going to go with Garfield on that one. No, wrong. Alan?
Obviously, it's James Buchanan.
Yeah, nice.
JFK, John F. Kennedy.
JFK, there you are.
JFK, great. All right. Great.
Here is a letter that came in from Anthony to panel at WAMC.org. A recent writer mentioned people close to him being hurt or killed by illegal immigrants. Of course, these were tragedies, but one can find anecdotal examples of every type of person committing crimes. Statistics say that illegal immigrants commit crimes at a lower rate than American citizens. Why aren't we discussing these numbers and facts? And that's from Anthony in Kingston.
Thank you, Anthony.
Stephen in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, thanks for listening in Brooklyn. Hi, folks. If somebody's sister is killed by a man with a freckle on his forehead, you don't arrest everyone with a freckle because of it. And this one is from...
Ray, yeah. My PhD advisor used to say there was an old Yiddish expression. She happened to be Puerto Rican. There's an old Yiddish expression, which was, for example, stinks.
And you often use that on all of us here in the... in the inner workings of the station. Yes. I get that a lot. This one from Maureen, who says, "Dear panel, will you please explain how fear of terrorists and refugees is connected with a rise in anti-Semitism? I don't quite understand why that's a go-to position, even for alt vandals," writes Maureen. Anybody? Go.
Alan?
You, Teresa, you. And the next time, I swear, I'll be listening.
That's okay.
What did he say again?
Okay.
Alan, this is you. This is you. So repeat
This is
it.
From Maureen.
This is a good question, but this is all you, Alan.
Who writes? Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Are you listening, Mr. Madison?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
take some notes.
The answer is James Buchanan.
What's
go
wrong?
Ahead.
The subject heading is anti-Semitism and vandalism. Will you please explain how fear of terrorists and refugees is connected with the rise in anti-Semitism? I don't quite understand why that's a go-to position, even for alt-vandals. And that's from Maureen.
Well, Maureen, of course, makes a very good point. She's exactly right, except that I think this comes down to character, that the people who are most likely to be taking these, reactionary, if that's the right word, positions are likely to be across the board reactionary, and that includes anti-Semitism, don't you think?
Right. I think it's creating an atmosphere, a toxic atmosphere. And I have one more presidential quote that might be relevant here. And this one is...
Oh, please.
Because you haven't had enough. We have serious problems to solve, and we need serious people to solve them. And whatever your particular problem is, I promise you, he is not the least bit interested in solving it. He is interested in two things and two things only, making you afraid of it and telling you who to blame for it. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you win elections. Now that is
Donald
actually,
Trump.
Now that is actually not a real president. That's from the American president and a friend of mine from the movie. A friend of mine sent it, posted it on Facebook last night, and I thought how interesting and relevant and prescient it is to what's going on right now. So, all right, I'm done with that.
I like that, though. That's a
Isn't
fun
that
game.
Amazing?
You know, name that president. We'll have to do that from time to time.
All right, we'll stop doing it now, though.
President Donald Trump is calling recent...
I don't know.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't know, Teresa. We only have 20 minutes. We have 20 minutes left. Next time, bring more quotes.
Oh, I think she has more quotes.
Oh, I'll stop.
Go ahead. Hit another quote.
No, I'm done. Go.
No, we love this. We love this game. This is great.
The best.
Oh, we love you. And by the way, speaking of love, we got a nice letter from Michael who says, Ray should be on the panel every day.
Oh, thanks for that, Michael. I appreciate it very much. Do you have another quote?
No, I do.
Okay, let's hear it.
The best way to not feel hopeless is to get up and do something. Don't wait for good things to happen to you. If you go out and make some good things happen, you'll fill the world with hope. You will fill yourself with hope.
Polk.
Hope.
That's funny.
No, it was Polk who said that,
Polk?
Right?
You said Polk?
Yeah.
You said Polk said that?
Yeah,
no,
right? No,
that was JFK.
Benjamin Harrison? All right, fine.
Barack Obama.
Ah, yes. Well,
I was going to save that one for when we talk about the town meetings. But, you know, it is President's Week, so we have to quote the presidents. That's
You make a point.
Right,
you make
right,
a point.
Right. And by the way, Lincoln keeps coming out at the top of the heap. Right?
Right.
So when you do the national popularity, who is the greatest, Lincoln almost always wins. But I think he won again this year.
Well, Pruitt is in business at the Environmental Protection Agency, and this is from the Washington Post.
Yep.
In his first full workday as administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt made clear yesterday that he intends to step back from what he sees as the agency's regulatory overreach during the Obama administration. He said, quote, "The only authority that any agency has in the executive branch is the authority given to it by Congress." That was said during a noon address to employees yesterday. "We need to respect that. We need to follow that, because when we do that, guess what happens? We avoid litigation. We avoid the uncertainty of litigation, and we reach better ends and outcomes at the end of the day." So we don't have to choose between jobs and the environment. Who wants at that?
He should know, because he's the great sewer when he was Attorney General out there of the Environmental Protection Administration. But he does have a big problem. Obviously, he has a big problem, the people who are working for him at the EPA. Many of the ex-ones have signed letters of protest to make it clear that this guy is out to destroy, that he's unsuitable for the position. And he is. No two ways about it. I mean, think about it for a minute. You have a country which despoiled its waters, despoiled its air, and did so much more. And along comes a group of people, scientists, motivated by the scientists, including those who are scared to death about the icebergs and all the rest, and about putting coal dust of all things into the streams. And they say, you know, this can't go forward, and yet it is. And I don't get it because, as I keep saying, don't these people have grandchildren? What is the matter with them?
Teresa.
Absolutely, Alan. I know, you know, some people were surprised at what he said, and it, some thought it sounded conciliatory, but I think what he said on the first day is not what we should be focused on. What we should be focused on is what the Trump administration is doing. And they have made it clear, you know, Trump doesn't believe in climate science and he's backing away from climate agreements and clean air and clean water regulations. And that's bad news for the U.S., but it's great news for China. You know, they're going to take the lead, the global lead, and that is going to be part of what will fuel the global realignment. And they will benefit economically, and we will pay a price. This is very short-sighted. You know, this is really, it's a it's economic issue, it's an environmental issue, and it's one that we miss at our own peril.
At what point do government employees, now Alan mentioned that there is some dissension among the ranks at the EPA of Pruitt's election and some people who are vocal about that. At what point, as an employee of the government, do you have to suck it up and say, yeah, I'm either going to work here and not make waves or leave?
Well, Raymond, of course, you understand the concept of having a conscience. Look, these people have been devoting their lives to protecting Americans. And they see, is it an improper word to say, miscreant, come into office and basically say, throw coal in the water, coal dust in the water. You know, forget about global climate. It isn't happening. And you think that they shouldn't? They should just, because they're civil servants, they should just shut up? I don't think so. I have nothing but admiration for them because they're taking their lives in their hand, their salaries in their hand, and everything else.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's a really serious issue, concern about the federal workforce. And this gets to what is an emerging constitutional crisis. At the highest levels, of course, you have secretaries and people at steps below them who are espousing policies that are different than the president's, in the name of the president. So that's confusing both domestically and globally. But also in the at the lower levels of the federal government, you have people who are going to be put in a position of proceeding in a way that's against the basic laws and against their common sense. And how that's going to work out is going to be challenging. Now, you always had a workforce that, you know, they know how to slow walk things. This happened during the Reagan administration.
With the air traffic controllers?
No, I'm thinking at the EPA, one of the things, you know, it can take a long time to write a rule, and these things are changed by rules, and some folks, if the rules they felt were going to be detrimental to the long-term health and benefit of the country, they might have taken a little longer to move that paperwork through. But I think this is a big problem that needs to be focused on.
Melissa writes,
you know,
go ahead, Alan.
No, I was going to read one, if it's okay with you, Ray.
It's possibly okay.
And it was Brian who said, "Dear panel, politicians defend their policies over national security. I wish one day we will fight over global environmental security." And that's from Brian. I like that letter.
Right.
You want to read any more?
No.
All right. Melissa writes, I think.
No. Was that a shot?
Not at all. No, I'm just making sure that we're not double reading here. Although we are,
are
in stereo.
We don't want to do that.
Okay,
yeah.
Melissa.
We've already gotten one letter saying if Alan's going to be at home, you know, there's got to be a better way that he doesn't end up talking over everybody. So maybe it could be some. Maybe people have an idea.
Why don't we
maybe
all go to your house?
Yeah, or we could go something like that. And then as soon as they hear a cough, then you know he wants to say something. Or
that's good radio.
Like that.
Yeah, you know, we could do that. Or a buzzer just goes off.
Our folks could be a little
patient. Buzzer. I like a buzzer.
All right.
Or a whistle. We have a whistle here.
Whistle while you work.
Okay. Melissa writes, I think things were brewing already. I think Mr. Trump just made it all right to say and do. If the president can say and show bigotry and hatred, then it's all right for those who are bigots and haters. And what better way to show hate than to target immigrants and refugees? They don't want to hurt people that can help themselves. They want to hurt people that are easy to target. And that is from Melissa. This is from Michael, subject heading STEM. Does the panel see a problem with the emphasis on the above when an important aspect of functional democracy is education in geography, history, social studies, etc.? Do you want to become a nation of idiot savants? And that's from Michael.
STEM.
Oh, boy.
Okay, go ahead, Alan.
Alan, sorry. You're recognized. Go ahead.
Okay, so Barbara writes, good morning, panel. Alan, thank you for that. Exactly what I've been saying, except I add in my 7 great-grandchildren. Don't these people have grandchildren was the quote. And that's from Barbara in Chatham. Thank you for that.
Yes.
That's it.
It's true. And President Trump is preparing executive orders aimed at curtailing policies on climate, water pollution, air pollution.
Yeah.
So on and so forth.
And you had mentioned the Veterans Administration.
Right. There's a very interesting thing with the Veterans Administration and the federal workforce. So among the other things with the federal workforce, there's a freeze on hiring.
Mm.
And so, as you recall, President Trump said, I'm all for the veterans, I'm all for the military, I'm going to help the veterans, I'm going to help the military. Well, the implications of that are at the veterans hospitals, there's a need to hire a lot more people, and they are having trouble doing that because of the freeze. But something that I read last night about the military, this is from the Department of the Army, a memo that came out saying that for parents with children enrolled in the United States Army Youth Services daycare program, they're going to be closing the daycare program. And the reason they have to close the daycare program is because of the hiring freeze. And they aren't able to hire the people they need to provide the daycare for these military families.
What happened
children.
To the people who are working at the daycare?
Must be somebody left. People leave. They can't fill the slots. Sure. They don't have enough staff people. And so that's the... When you have these blanket hiring freezes, decisions have consequences. They aren't very well thought out. They might sound good politically. We're going to, you know, freeze all hiring of the federal workforce. But when you actually deal with that within the federal government, it can create quite a problem, wreak havoc. And in this case, for the Department of the Army child care programs. Some of their child care programs aren't sufficiently staffed, so they're going to have to close them.
Our
decisions
email,
have consequences.
Our email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We are in the final moments of our panel today. President Trump is calling recent threats against Jewish community centers horrible and painful. Trump made the remarks Tuesday after touring the National Museum of African American History and Culture. He said the museum was a meaningful reminder of why we have to fight bigotry, intolerance, and hatred in all forms. The threats against Jewish community centers are a very sad reminder of what still needs to be done, Trump said. Earlier, the White House denounced hatred and hate-motivated violence without directly mentioning the recent threats against the centers or Jews. The FBI said it's joining with the Justice Department to investigate possible civil rights violations in connection with the threats to Jewish centers across the country. Alan, I know you were recording with Paul Tonko yesterday, and I think he mentioned this, right?
Well, this is terrible. I mean, this is really terrible. We're going backwards here. There are many people who think Trump is directly, I mean directly, some say indirectly responsible by setting the tone. When this first came up, what did he do? He shut his mouth. He didn't say a thing, which he should have done. Obviously, the pushback has been so great from people of all religions. Remember, the Jewish population in the United States is only 2%. And from all people, so he gets out front. He goes and makes a symbolic visit to the Civil Rights Museum, all while trying to deal with the people most at risk in this country. It's just more than I can fathom. But he did it. Some people say, well, he did it too late, but at least he did it, I suppose.
Teresa?
Well, I think that, I think it's some of the folks who focus on this quite a bit felt it was a gesture, but an empty gesture too late. But at least he did utter the words. But I was interested in his overall remarks at the museum, and I was shocked at how poor, this might sound silly, but poorly written they were. And this is not that he was, you know, it wasn't extemporaneous.
These were prepared remarks.
And I'm thinking ahead to next week. He's giving his first State of the Union address. And his message, I think, was muddled at best. At a time when you need to have a clear message against this kind of violence that's going on. I also thought it was interesting that the Muslim community came together and quickly raised an enormous amount of money to help pay for damage to a cemetery. Right, Alan, did you read that? And I thought that was interesting, an interesting response.
So you're suggesting Trump may need a new speechwriter?
I think Trump needs a speechwriter. And in this case, it's not, you know, it's not that he was speaking extemporaneously. It was he was reading a speech that was it was poorly written. And words matter. I mean, he's got to understand that words matter. And he's sending a message. He's sending a message, in this case, to the Jewish community, to the country, and to the world.
I think he knows. Yeah, I'm sorry, Teresa. I think he knows that words matter, and that's why he does what he does. He's playing to that base of his, and by not mentioning Jews when he's memorializing, when talking about the Holocaust, or by waiting this long to say anything about anti-Semitism, or by coming after the Muslim population the way that he has, I think he knows that words matter, and he knows that if he says something to alienate that base, he could be in trouble, which is why he waited so long.
Well, that's where we will have to leave it today. Teresa Bourgeois and Alan Chartok, thank you. Rosemary Armeo, thank you as well. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll be back.